Good morning. I was given the title of this lesson in the meditation just now, and it will strike you undoubtedly as a very strange one for January 5th, but the title is Preparation for Easter. Of course, there is no such thing as experiencing Easter without a preparation for it. And to make this perfectly clear, sometimes I am asked, is this to be a lecture or a talk or a class? And the only answer I can make is that you are the one who determines that, not I. Because so far as I know, in my entire lifetime, I have never given a talk or a lecture. Every time I open my mouth, it is meant as an impartation of truth. And this makes of it a lesson or a class. But there are those who listen with their ears closed, and to them this would be a talk. And there are those who listen with their ears open, and let everything go in one ear and out the other. And to them this would be a lecture. But really it is meant as an impartation of truth. And for this reason, there are really no such things as lessons in spiritual teaching. Just as there are no such things as holidays. We don't know any such thing as a Christmas holiday, New Year holiday, Easter holiday, 4th of July, Thanksgiving, Labor Day. We know none of those things as holidays. To us, each of these must be an experience. Otherwise, they have no value in our lives, except as pastime. Just think of this for a moment. Whatever happens to you, or to me, or to anyone else, must happen as an experience of our consciousness. Without an activity of my individual consciousness, nothing can happen to me, for good or for evil. Without an activity of your consciousness, nothing can happen to you. It is for this reason, at least this is one of the reasons, that people who are confined to mental institutes actually live so much longer than the rest of us. The human span is longer. And the reason is nothing is happening to them. Nothing is going on in their consciousness. Nothing is taking place in their consciousness, except an imaginary volume of words or thoughts going in and out, but no experience is taking place. And actually, we live only in proportion to the conscious activity of our being. Otherwise, we are unconscious. in some cases, in so many cases of the human race, we are nothing but walking dead, not only unconscious, but actually dead, because we are alive only as something is taking place in our consciousness, something that we are consciously aware of. And so it is that to accept, let us say, Easter as commemorating the resurrection of a man who died or was crucified 2,000 years ago is really not living, not being conscious. It is just letting superstition and ignorance pass through from one ear to the other and on out. Because resurrection is an experience. It's an experience of truth. And the reason for the Master's resurrection wasn't merely to prove that he could be raised up from the dead or that he could raise himself up from the dead. Because what value would that be to us? It was to exemplify his teaching that the dead are to be raised, whether dead in sin, dead in lack, dead in ignorance, dead in disease. The dead are to be resurrected, raised up into life again. As a matter of fact, the resurrection is the main teaching of all mysticism, all religious teachings, all philosophical teachings. I'm sure all truth teachings, because without resurrection, you really have nothing. You have individuals who are sick, sinning, dying, dead. Without resurrection, that's where you leave them. You have individuals in the prison of their mentality, of their thoughts. Without resurrection, that's where you would leave them. Therefore, the entire race, all mankind, must be resurrected eventually, must be raised out of the death out of inertia, which is a death in itself, a going on and a continuing on in an old pattern. This is inertia, this is death. Now, to be resurrected, as the Master proved, take something more than having 12 practitioners around you, or 11, and asking them to pray with you. There's more to resurrection than that. Because he had 11 practitioners around him, and probably many of them very good practitioners, healers. And he did ask them to pray with him and to stay awake with him. But it did not result in his resurrection. In the end, he had to pray alone. In the end, he had to realize his own resurrection and ascension. And if you ask how, you must start with the premise that it all took place within his own consciousness. It is true that part of our resurrection comes because of his experience and his disciples' experience and apostles. Part of our resurrection comes because we have found spiritual teachers or spiritual practitioners to help us on the way. But be assured of this, that these are just temporary helps. Our resurrection only comes through an activity of our own consciousness. Something must take place within us, which ultimately leads to the Easter day, that is, the actual experience of resurrection. What the Master did during the years of his seminary life, what the Master did during his 3 years of ministry, all of this together added up to whatever took place in his consciousness in Gethsemane, and on that final walk to Golgotha, all of these experiences added together must have come to a focus in that last 24 hours and enabled him to make the final demonstration on earth of resurrection, and probably paved the way for the next realization, which resulted in the ascension. Now, resurrection is not something that happened to the Master. Ascension is not something that happened to the Master. Resurrection and ascension is something that was an actual activity of the consciousness of the Master. And without this activity, whatever its nature, there would have been no resurrection and no ascension. And as we have discovered in many, many, many years of this work, whatever harmony, grace, beauty, prosperity, whatever measure of success, love, health, joy, whatever measure of these come into my experience, I can assure you have come through the years of struggling inside of myself, with the help, of course, of books, teachings, teachers, but ultimately through a struggle within my own consciousness to attain something. In the beginning, I had only one goal, and that was to discover why God is not in the human universe, why God doesn't stop wars or prevent them, why God doesn't stop or prevent murders, rape, arson, suicide. Why isn't God in this human picture? That was my goal. And the struggle lasted exactly 20 years, from 1909 to 1929, until the first answer came. And the struggle could only take place in my consciousness because I had no knowledge then, as I have no knowledge now, of any other place to find the answer to that particular question. Now, in the same way, since then, I have discovered with our students in all parts of the world that some of them attain most wonderful experiences of life, most wonderful harmonies and peace, most wonderful contacts with the Father within. And in the case of each and every one of them, I know that regardless of what help I may have been to them, regardless of what help these writings may have been to them, their success did not come through me or through the writings. Their success came through the struggle that took place in their consciousness to embody that which is in this message. The message itself will not do it. I have known of too many people who have read these writings and then given them away, even sold them to secondhand bookstores, because there was nothing in them. Well, of course there was nothing for them, because there was no receptive activity in their consciousness to do something with what was in them. What is in them alone will not do it. It is what your individual consciousness does with what is in the message that does it. We can say, of course, from now until doomsday that God is good, and that God is love, that God careth for his own. And we can even go further with all of our metaphysical friends and say, evil is not power, sin is not power, disease is not power. And all of this while, you can be sick and sinning and poor and dying and dead. Because until there is an answering response within your own consciousness, this message remains only the letter of truth that killeth. Paul was very clear on that. The letter of truth killeth. At least if it doesn't kill, it doesn't cure. The letter of truth doesn't cure. Reading the books sometimes result in individual healings, but that is not the object of this work. The real cure is when the resurrection and the ascension take place. When we are raised up out of the death of mortality into immortality, when we ascend above humanhood into our Christhood. This was the object of the Master's message. That's why he spoke about those who came to him only for loaves and fishes. Whether the loaves and fishes meant food or healing made no difference. Those who came only for loaves and fishes missed the entire message of the Master. Of course, after he fed them and they came back the next day for more loaves and fishes, he rebuked them. A spiritual message results in loaves and fishes. These are the added things. But loaves and fishes is not the goal. The goal is resurrection and ascension. The goal is putting off mortality and putting on immortality. The goal is dying daily to our humanhood, and being spiritually reborn into our Christ self, the reality of us. But this, you must understand, is an activity of consciousness. And insofar as it is to affect you or me, it is an activity of your consciousness and of my consciousness. As humans, we can wait for Easter Day to come around and have Easter eggs and turkey and ham and a rest from our labors and celebrate Easter, even remembering that 2,000 years ago, Jesus was raised from the tomb. We can do that because there will be millions of others doing that very thing, remembering that Jesus was raised from the tomb. What value that is to them, I don't know. What they gain from it, I gain from his experience the fact that he meant to prove to me that what he accomplished, we can accomplish by following the way he taught, by following the way he lived. He was the exemplar. He was the way shower. He set forth the fact that we can attain immortality. We can attain a resurrection from the tomb, that we can be set free from the prison of our mind, the prison of sin, the prison of false appetite, the prison of disease, the prison of old age, because, remember, none of these things actually exist anywhere except in the mind of man. There is no such thing actually as old age, because all you have to do is look out and you will see that there are no signs of age out there. Every day is the same as yesterday. The oceans are no older than they were. The skies are no older than they were. The stars and the sun and the moon, none of these are old. They are really eternal, and so are we. But age does exist as a universal belief in the mind of man, which we individually accept. And therefore, as long as we entertain in thought the belief that each passing day or each passing year makes us older, that is what we demonstrate. And therefore, we cannot be resurrected out of the belief of age until we re-identify ourselves. Now, the Master set forth the manner of his re-identifying himself when he said that if you destroy this temple, in 3 days, I will raise it up again. Here he declared the immortality of his individual being. Because even if you destroy this temple, this body, I will still be around. I will still be here to raise it up. You will not have done anything to me. I, even with a destroyed body, I will raise it up, and then they destroyed the body. They destroyed it, and they made sure that it was dead. They broke the bones, and they cast in the sword, as well as all of the nails. They made very sure that he was dead, but he wasn't. I was omnipresence. I was omniscience, omnipotence, and therefore I was right there to perform the miracle of resurrection, raising the body from the tomb. So it is with you and me. We also have a temple. which we have thought of as a human body, which it isn't. Actually, it is the temple of God, the body of God. Only our false concept of it makes it appear to us as a human body. But actually, this is the temple of God. And it is given to me as a vehicle, as an instrument for use, as long as I shall need it on earth. Now, there will be a right time to drop this body, time when no further service can be performed on earth, a time when my mission is completed, a time when my work is done and obligations have been fulfilled, then the time will go to drop this sense of body and go on. But I will not drop me. I will live forever. Now, should some experience of the race mind threaten my body, before my work is finished, then according to the Master's revelation, since I am still here, I can raise up, resurrect this body from disease, from death itself if it strikes. I can do this because I will never leave me nor forsake me. I am with me always. I am eternally alive, and I will be alive eternally. At least as long as God lives, I will live, for the life of God and the life of me is the same life. There is only one life. Therefore, my life is as eternal as God's. Therefore, if you destroy this temple before I'm ready to give it up, I will raise it up again. I will raise it out of disease. I will raise it out of any sin or out of any temptation or any false appetite. I will raise it out of lack or limitation because I am always here where I am. If I mount up to heaven, I am here. If I make my bed in hell, I am here. If I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I am here. For I and my Father are one. The life of God and my life is one. But, you see, I cannot accomplish this by reading about it in books. This is the letter of truth. There must, first of all, be something in me that responds to that message and says, ah, yes, this is truth. Then I must abide in that word, and I must let that word abide in me. I must live with this truth over and over again, that I and the Father are one, and that I am the life of this body, and I am the law unto this body, and I am come that this body might have life and that it might have life more abundant. I am come that my experience might be fruitful. I and my Father are one. I have meat the world knows not of. I have meat, hidden manna. But I must live with that truth. I must let that truth abide in my consciousness. I must abide in that word. I must sing the same song from morning to night. And certainly as my very last thought before sleeping, so that I carry it into my sleep with me. Because I must not lose consciousness even when I'm sleeping. I must be conscious 24 hours a day, even when I'm at rest. My consciousness must be alive with this truth, that I and my Father are one, and all that the Father hath is mine. I have a hidden manna, which is life eternal. I am the bread of life. I embody the bread of life. But this must be an activity of my consciousness. And I must keep going right on with the Master, that if this body for any reason is destroyed, I will raise it up. I will be right there. Consciousness will be right there to revive it, to heal it, to renew it, as long as I have any earthly use for it. I have had the experience recently of being taken into my Master's household, into my Master's consciousness, into my Master's temple, even the place, the cave, where my Master lives. The Master, for there is but one. And this is an experience of consciousness in which the body travels just as rapidly as thought. You can make this an activity of your consciousness by remembering this. If you close your eyes now for a moment and think about where you live, your residence, your present home. And look outside, on the street or on the grounds. And now, let us immediately move to the shore at Waikiki. Let us go right out on the sand in front of the Royal Hawaiian or the Halekulani or Kuhio Beach, any place along Waikiki, and just see how rapidly we've moved there, not only mind but body as well. Surely, surely not corporeality, but body. We didn't leave the body to go there. If you'll notice, we have our body right while we're standing on the beach. And so if we like, we can move right up to the top of the Pali, look out on that valley, and instantaneously we are there. And we are there in our same body, same form. Now this is not an experience of imagination. This is an experience of consciousness. It just so happens that you find it very easy to do because we have only been to the places with which you are familiar. But just remember that just as you can move about so readily in the places with which you are familiar with an activity of consciousness, you could move about just as freely any part of this globe, even up into the other planets, into the skies, and down beneath the waters, because everything that takes place in your experience must take place as an activity of your consciousness. Not even your body can move without an activity of your consciousness moving it. Therefore, the life of the vegetables, the so-called walking dead, is usually a life lived without conscious thought. And life moves in on them and moves them around, here, there, and the other place. All the nice things that happen, of course, are due to themselves, but all of the wrong things that happen is always due to somebody else, or some other experience, or somebody else's evils. But it isn't so. It is only the fact that they permit themselves to be acted upon. They do not live their own lives. They do not take their lives into their own consciousness and govern it. They let themselves be acted upon. And if the world wants to say that you catch cold by sitting in a draft or getting wet feet, so be it unto them, and they do it. And then when it is decided that you cannot catch cold that way anymore, then they do not catch cold that way anymore. None of this of their own doing, all of this being acted upon by the forces of human belief. But an individual of course, that is one reason that you are living in the United States. Because here, so definitely, you are, if you would like to be, you are permitted to be an individual. There is no one here telling us how to think, when to think, or what to think about. We, in this country, if we wish to exercise the privilege, we can be individuals. But to be an individual means actually to understand that you can only be one by an activity of your own consciousness, determining for yourself the nature of the thoughts that you are to think. Not accepting everything that appears in print, even those things that are in print because someone believes them to be good and true. Each one has the same infinite consciousness and can evaluate what goes into their thought. Of course, in the doing of it, we make lots of mistakes, but we have no right to be afraid of mistakes. Sometimes these mistakes lead us to the right path. The main thing is that we determine at some time or other that we will be resurrected, and that we will ascend. Without this conviction and determination, of course, the years will just pass and we will continue to be acted upon by every wind that blows. But in a given moment, when we can accept that the resurrection of Christ Jesus was a lesson, it wasn't a talk and it wasn't a lecture, it was a lesson, an exemplification, an impartation of truth, showing us that which is possible to us as individuals, then we can begin the process of consciously abiding in the Word, consciously letting the Word abide in us until, in a moment that ye think not, all of a sudden it happens the bridegroom cometh, the actual experience comes of resurrection and eventually ascension. Of ourselves, we cannot choose to do this. This I say to you most regretfully. This I say to you very sadly, after having witnessed for many more than 30 years, that it is so, that of your own accord, you cannot even determine to live. You cannot determine to live consciously. You cannot determine to abide in the Word and let the Word abide in you. You cannot do this. It is only by the grace of God. It is only when you have been touched, something within you responds, and you say, I can begin, or I am going to begin, or this is my path. Each one in turn waits for that time when the Spirit of God touches them and awakens them to the possibilities of the spiritual life. And even then, it is given to us only to begin gently. We can possibly begin by reading or hearing truth 30 or 40 or 60 minutes in a day. More than that, it's very difficult to take at first. Eventually, as we persist, it becomes 2 hours and three. And Paul, of course, gives us the goal. Pray without ceasing. Know the truth without ceasing. Abide in the Word without ceasing, day and night. Live consciously always. Never live, not even for a moment of the day, to permit the human mind to have its way with you. Now, you can understand what I'm saying by this. If you remember a few years ago, the attempt to bring subliminal perception into advertising, this was, let us say, you are sitting here, and somewhere else, someone else is projecting thoughts into your consciousness. You don't hear it and you don't see it. But all of a sudden you jump up out of your seat and you run downstairs and say, I must have a bag of peanuts. I must have a Coca-Cola. This is what actually happened in experiments. Nobody knew why, they just had to do it. Well, of course, had it been carried out, you would have jumped up and without thinking whether or not you could afford it, you would have gone out to buy a Chrysler or a Cadillac or Lincoln, and then afterward had to worry about how to pay for it. Now, the practice was outlawed in England and destroyed in the United States, so that it's not operating in that direction. But in other directions, it is. Every human has urges to do things and think things which they don't want to do and which they don't want to think and which they know are not good for them. And yet, they cannot control that instinct or that thought or that deed. And this is because we have lived for centuries letting the universal belief of the world influence us and have power and jurisdiction over us. We have lived so as to let ignorance and superstition and fear govern us, whereas it isn't necessary. It is not necessary to be victims of ignorance, superstition, fear, because there is a secret that was known to the ancients and was taught by the Master, even though the manuscripts that are available to us do not indicate how he taught it. And that is that you can be a law unto yourselves by abiding in the Word and letting the Word abide in you. By living and moving and having your being in God consciousness instead of man consciousness. By living, dwelling in the secret place of the Most High instead of dwelling in carnal thoughts, carnal hopes, carnal ambitions. It has been said that we must choose this day whom we will serve. I don't believe we have that power to choose. I believe that at some moment of our lives, truth is presented to us when we are prepared to accept it. And from that moment on, we have no choice. We must accept it, even though at first with hesitation, even though at first we take it and drop it and pick it up again and drop it again, even though at first it may be for 1 hour a week or 1 hour a day, but it, the Spirit of God within us, will not let us alone. And it will keep nagging and keep plaguing until eventually the light dawns. You know, this was the experience of Saul of Tarsus. When he gave up voluntarily his free citizenship to live among the Hebrews in the Holy Land, it wasn't that he didn't love freedom. It was only that something inside of him was compelling him to find God. And from what he knew at the time, the only place God was to be found was in Jerusalem. Strange thing is, of course, that it was true. Only he went to the wrong part of Jerusalem at first because he didn't know of the other. And so he went to the temple and learned the letter of truth which killeth. But remember that operating in his consciousness all of this time that he was working in the temple and studying in the temple, operating in his consciousness was this drive for truth. And even though he couldn't recognize it in the Master or in the Master's teachings, nevertheless, the drive for truth was there, and eventually he found it. He found it. He was led out of that temple. He was led out of the letter of truth into the experience. But let us never forget that all of these years of his freedom and of his life in Jerusalem, all of this time, there was an activity going on in his consciousness driving him to truth, even to the extent of being willing to give up his freedom. There was something driving him to truth, and once that drive is there, it doesn't come by virtue of man, it comes by virtue of God. And once that drive is there, it may lead us in a wrong direction, It will not lead us in a wrong direction. We permit ourselves in our ignorance to go in a wrong direction, but ultimately it leads us out of there to that which inwardly we are seeking, and that is realization, God realization. To each one of us, regardless of what goal we are following on earth, what path we are following, the goal is God realization. And none of us in this room, and none of us who hear these tapes, none of us will ever rest until the goal is achieved. And that goal is God realization. It is for this reason that in the message of the infinite way, each one is not only free when they come, they are just as free when they go. In other words, no one is ever bound to this message by membership, obligation, duty, or any other reason, because this message recognizes above all that you are not seeking this message. You are seeking God realization. And if this message can be a help to you on that way, on the way, you are welcome to it. It was the way in which I came, and it is set forth as a help for all those who may be led to it. But for no other reason, it is not to bind anyone ever in a membership, a duty, or an obligation. And always remember this. Should the day come when the day will come when I am not visibly present, do not let anyone sell you on the virtues of organizing this and becoming a member and uniting to get greater benefits from it, because there are no benefits to be gotten from uniting or membership. The only uniting that gives benefit is uniting with God. Your conscious oneness with God is your salvation. This message is intended to help those who are receptive and responsive to it, but to help them not by taking them out of freedom, but by leaving them in their freedom. And always remember this, and those of you who are very, very young, please remember it in the generations to come. When somebody tries to sell you on the idea of how wonderful it would be to unite, either to build a monument to Joel or to get a greater blessing from God for yourself, oh, there will be lots of good reasons offered you. But please remember that you have been taught that the secret of life is consciousness, your consciousness. Your consciousness in its oneness with God is infinite and supreme, not your consciousness in union with other men or women. Your consciousness in its oneness with God. We can unite in meditations and find a greater strength, but that uniting in meditation has no human obligation with it, none whatsoever. Let this work forever result in your freedom and in the freedom of those who come to it, so that wherever there is a meditation oasis, be sure that everyone that comes to meditate in it is free to meditate in accordance with their spiritual leading. And if they would like to sit in a chair, make them welcome. If they prefer a pillow on the floor, let them have it. All right, then, Easter is to be an experience of resurrection. Therefore, we prepare for that each moment of our lives. Just as in planting fruit trees, the goal is to have fruit, but the preparation for it is the planting of the seed, the rain, the sunshine, the fertilizer. All of this is preparation for the ultimate experience of fruitage. So with us, abiding in the Word, letting the Word abide in us, consciously renewing our understanding moment by moment. Here and now, I and the Father are one. Here and now, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. Now, I in the midst of me has come that I might have life, and that I might have life more abundantly. And so, abiding consciously in truth, I bring forth spiritual fruitage. Letting myself be mentally unconscious, I take in the seeds of the carnal mind, and the fruit that I bring forth is carnal. Paul told us of that. If you sow to the flesh, you reap corruption. If you sow to the Spirit, you reap life everlasting. But remember, sowing is an activity of consciousness. You cannot sow without taking thought. You cannot sow without abiding in truth. You cannot sow without an activity of consciousness going on. Therefore, be careful that you are not letting the mind be idle, so that it takes in every seed that's blowing around in the air. But keep the mind active, abiding in truth, so that you are sowing to the Spirit. And then on Easter, that is, at a particular day or moment, an experience of resurrection takes place. It may not actually be on the day called Easter Day. Each one of us has our own Easter Day. Each one of us has an actual moment of experience in which we are resurrected, in which the old man of us is dead. Then there is a 3-day period after which I raise up this temple again. And then there is the longer period of preparation for the final experience of ascension above mortality, ascension into Christhood, even while here on earth. Always remember that since Jesus attained Christhood, he was imparting to us the truth that Christhood is the measure of our experience, our goal, our attainment. And once we have been touched, we never again can rest until we have attained it. True, for a long, long time, we're all going to say, I do not claim to have fully attained. But I am going to repeat day after day that that attainment is my goal, and that I do know that I will only attain it by an activity of truth in my consciousness. Thank you.